Daivena, by the will of the Supreme, Kaya Vimshatika, by the 23 principal ingredients, Gunaha, the combination, Prerita, induced by, Ajanayat, manifested, Swabhi, by his personal, Matrabhi, plenary expansion, Adhi Purusham, the gigantic universal form, Vishwarupa. Prabodha Karma Daivena, Trayavinshatiko Gana, Prerito Janayat Swabhi, Matrabhiradipurusham, Prabuddha Karma Daivena, Trayavinshatiko Gana, Prerito Janayat Swabhi, Matrabhiradipurusham, Prabuddha Karma Daivena, Trayavinshatiko Gana, Prerito Janayat Swabhi, Matrabhiradipurusham. Translation. When the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, the gigantic universal form of the Vishwarupa body of the Lord came into existence. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Virat Rupa or Vishwarupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, which is very much appreciated by the impersonalists, is not an eternal form of the Lord. It is manifested by the supreme will of the Lord after the ingredients of material creation. Lord Krishna exhibited this Virat or Vishwarupa to Arjuna just to convince the impersonalists that he is the original personality of Godhead. Krishna exhibited the Virat Rupa. It is not that Krishna was exhibited by the Virat Rupa. The Virat Rupa is not, therefore, an eternal form of the Lord exhibited in this spiritual style. It is a material manifestation of the Lord. The Archa Vigraha, or the worshipable deity in the temple, is a similar manifestation of the Lord for the neophytes. But in spite of their material touch, such form to the Lord as the Virat and Archa are all non-different from his eternal form as Lord Krishna. Pause here before we go on. Jnana-timiram-hasya jnana-anjana-shalakayam chakshiram-nirupanyana tasmai shri guruve namaha shri-kavipad-ki-dhai. So we just, in the previous chapter, we're hearing about how the constituents of the material manifestation were unable to act until they were empowered by the Supreme Lord. But they have no independence to act, and they were offering prayers for the Lord's assistance. So now we're going to hear a description more specific about the Virat Rupa, creation of the universal form. This is actually the fourth time that the universal form is discussed up to this point in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes not extensively. And we'll hear more too later, actually. Kapila Deva will also talk about the universal form. So it's quite a significant aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we first hear about, in this verse today, the 23 principal elements. So maybe we have a hard time remembering what those are. Actually, the list is not always exactly the same. At least 20 of them, or 21 of them, are pretty much always the same. We can think of the four groups of five. First, the material elements, earth, water, fire, and air, and ether. That's one group of five. Then you have the 10 senses, the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses. So then you get 15. And then you have the sense objects, five sense objects, sound, form, touch, taste, and smell. So it's not so hard to remember those 20, four groups of five. Then, of course, with the senses, sometimes it says there are 11 senses because the mind is considered. So the mind is the 21st, you can say. And then and they're listed differently in a different way. The other ones, sometimes it said, one list I found, it said the other two are the Mahatattva and the Ahankar. So those are pretty standard. Actually, Mahatattva is sometimes called the universal intelligence. And it's also in one place, Prabhupada also refers to it as the sum total of the ahankars of all the jivas. So anyway, this one particular list, it had these 20, and then the mind, ahankar, and mahatattva. That makes it up to 23. So as Prabhupada says here, it's not an eternal form of the Lord, but in some ways it is a form. Now we know, here's because sometimes people, it's a form, so they think, well, it's Krishna's form. So, okay, it's his form, but it's not exactly his form. His form is Satchidananda Rupa. So at the end of in the first canto, in chapter 3 of the first canto, we have the avatars. Actually, it begins with the Purusha. The avatars all come out from the Purusha, the Vishnus in the material world, they're called Purushas, or they're also called Paramatmas. So from them, or the avatars, they all come out. So when we hear the description of all these different avatars in the third chapter of the first canto, and of course when we get to Krishna, it says, all of these that I've listed there, they're coming from the Purusha or secondary expansion of the Purusha, Ansha and Kala. But Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the origin of everything. So then just after that, in text number 30 of that chapter, this is the verse, Etarupam Bhagavato Kyarupasya Chiratmana Maya Gunar Virachitam Mahadadi Viratmani. The conception of the Virat universal form of the Lord in the material world is imaginary. So in other words, it doesn't fit into that list that led up to Krishna of all those other avatars. It is to enable the less intelligent and neophytes to adjust to the idea of the Lord's having form. But factually, the Lord has no material form. So that's what Prabhupada is explaining it here. It's not an impersonal form. He says it's appreciated by the impersonalist. Now, actually, it's part of the, you might say, preaching of the Bhagavatam, or preaching of the representative of the Bhagavatam, the devotees, like, and the speakers of the Bhagavatam. Their presentation and their, one of their tactics for getting people to advance in spiritual life, get out of Maya. In fact, in the very beginning of the second canto, where Sukadeva Goswami begins speaking, first, the first thing he says is that everyone is in Maya, because all they do is talk nonsense all the time. And they're wasting their lives. And then he, right away, he gives some verses that promote devotional service. Hearing, chanting, worshiping the Lord, especially chanting. But then when he begins speaking on, now this is actually what they should do, then he talks about meditation. He says that one should go to a secluded place and sit down and try to meditate. Or meditate on the Lord. And I think in that context it describes it there, but there are other places in the Bhagavatam where we have very detailed descriptions of Lord Vishnu, or Paramatma, the yogi is supposed to meditate on. But then just after that, either Pariksit Maharaj asks a question, or Sukadeva Goswami is just thinking on what the objection could be, I can't remember right now. But then he starts talking about the universal form. And Prabhupada says the idea is there that someone may say, well, I can't just go away someplace and sit down and practice yoga and meditate on the Lord in the heart. So Sukadeva Goswami is implying that, okay, you can't, so meditate on this external form. Meditate on the universe as God. Think of this gigantic person as God. And who is this person? Well, he's made up of all the different parts of the universe. So especially, of course, Prabhupada says here, this is very good for the impersonalists because they want to, they reject this idea that God can have any form. So think of this form of God. Get your mind, you know, fixed on this idea that God does have an actual form. And even here's a form. This is one of his forms, actually. But it's not an eternal form, but it is one of his forms. You can say it's a form, it's form in different ways. One way is that it's a conception. So you can conceive of a form in your mind. So it's a form, but it's not made of the stuff that we're used to, earth, water, fire, and so on. But it's still a form. It's a mental form. So this is, even though this, so this is a conception, but it is actually a kind of form. And of course, it's a form because it is made of something. It's made of Krishna's energy. And that, of course, is a very important part of our philosophy. That Krishna's energy is a real thing. This world is a real thing. It's not like the impersonalists say that it's mitya, that it doesn't actually exist. The example given in the Vedas sometimes is that the horns of a rabbit. You tell someone to meditate on the horns of a rabbit. Well, you can't, because there's no such thing. Rabbits don't have horns. So it's not imagined, it's not unreal in that sense. But it's unreal in the sense that there's not this gigantic actual body that is a form of Krishna there. It's a way of conceiving of it. So let's go on to the next verse. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Parena vishita svasmin matraya vishvasrikdana Chaksho bhanyanyam asadya yasmin lokashtirachara. As the Lord in his plenary portion entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creatures rest. So this is an example. It's one. You can see people can get confused because you think, well, it's actually there's this gigantic person there, the Virat Purusha, and he has this form, and this is what it looks like. So it's sometimes it's hard to, you know, understand what this form means. Actually, I'm going to skip away. I have some notes here, and this comes from Burijan Prabhu. And some of you may know he has his book called Unveiling the Lotus Feet. It's all about the Bhagavatam. He's a very serious scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this section where he's talking about this section of the third canto, he gives us his, you might say, his take on the universal form from what he's read, which It's interesting because there are different ways to look at it and how you conceive of it, but this is what he says in his book. He says, the Vishwarupa is like a blueprint of the universe. As a material manifestation of the Lord, it cannot strictly be called his form because his form is ever spiritual and never material. Nevertheless, the Lord pervades and is non-different from the entire material creation. The subtle material form by which the Lord pervades the universe while displaying everything in the universe is called his universal form. And I'll just stop to insert something here. I have a little trouble with this word of subtle form of the Lord, because actually there are two universal forms. I don't know if I wrote down that verse. But it comes up actually just after the one that I read from the third chapter. It says that there's also a subtle, besides a gross universal form, there's a subtle universal form. And it's compared to, just like we have two forms. We have this gross physical form, and we have the subtle, and we say gross body and subtle body. So similarly, the universal form has a gross body and subtle body. Now what that subtle universal form is, that one's a little hard to figure out. Later in the second canto, text 35, I think it is, it says that the devotee, because there's some mention of the gross universal form, and then some verse, at least a verse or two about the subtle universal form. Basically what it says, I should have written it down, because it describes how it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. It's very avyakta, unmanifest. I don't think I have it here. But then it says, but the devotees, they're not interested in either one of these forms. That's the idea. Because the yogis, or especially the impersonalist yogis, they're encouraged to actually meditate on these forms. One more subtle than the other, to help them progress. The Vedas have so many ways of helping people move forward. It's interesting, actually, when you think about it, it seems like some of these things, they seem like they would take many lifetimes for people to work their way up step by step to make really solid spiritual advancement, especially come to the point of real bhakti. So anyway, in that section of the second canto, it says there that the devotees are not interested in meditation in either one of these, the gross or the subtle form, or the universal form. So anyway, I'll continue. Here's what more of what Burijan Prabhu says. He says, the universal form appears from Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and is an aspect of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, the third of the Purusha avatars. So it is presented like that. So again, you think, well, there's this gigantic person there. Kshirodakshayi Vishnu both enters the heart of each living entity and pervades every atom in the universe. Of course, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, he pervades the universe in another way. He's the soul, the super soul. I said that Brahma is the soul of the universe, which is another thing. Sometimes Brahma gets mixed in with this, especially in the fifth canto. Brahma is actually called Hiranyagarbha. And Hiranyagarbha is sometimes, or that subtle universal form is sometimes referred to as Hiranyagarbha. But it's really hard to nail it down because different things are called Hiranyagarbha in the Bhagavatam. One of the things it says that the Hiranyagarbha is the soul of all the jivas, the conglomerate jivas. It's called Samashti Jiva. So all the jivas all conglomerated, merged together. There's a soul for that. And sometimes that's said to be Brahma. That's said to be one of Brahma's bodies. Brahma has three different bodies. He has the four-headed one that we usually think of. He has the one on the top of Mount Meru. And then this one, which is called Vairajya Brahma, the soul of the conglomerate jivas, which is also sometimes called Hiranyagarbha. Of course, Hiranya means gold, and Garbha means, sometimes it's translated womb as womb, and sometimes it's translated as fetus. So, the fetus in the womb. Okay. So anyway, let me go on with this a little something. Thus, the gross manifestation of the universe rests directly on the Lord's universal form. The gross manifestation of the universe rests on the Lord's universal form, which is considered the Lord's first descent into the material realm. So again, the way he's presenting it, you think it's, you know, an actual person. Just as a soul encaged in matter possesses both a subtle and a gross body, with the gross body based on the subtle. So the super soul possesses a subtle body, the universal form, and a gross manifestation of it, the universe. So maybe he has a better understanding than I do of what the subtle universal form is. As the gross and subtle bodies ultimately rest on the soul, so both the subtle and gross features of the universe ultimately rest on Krishna's presence as the super soul. So that's a nice explanation, as far as I can follow it. So what did I, where am I? Did I read the translation? I think I did. Anyway, let me read it again. As the Lord in his plenary portion entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. Purport. The elements of cosmic creation are all matter and have no potency to increase in volume unless entered into by the Lord in his plenary portion. Interesting way of expressing it. Increase in volume. This means that matter does not increase or decrease unless it is spiritually touched. Matter is a product of spirit and increases only by the touch of spirit. I guess like our bodies, they increase in volume. It starts as a little baby, and because the spirit is there, the volume increases, sometimes beyond our desire for it to increase. The entire cosmic manifestation has not assumed its gigantic form by itself, as wrongly calculated by less intelligent persons. As long as spirit is within matter, matter can increase as needed. But without the spirit, matter stops increasing. For example, as long as there is a spiritual consciousness within the material body of a living entity, the body increases to the required size, but a dead material body, which has no spiritual consciousness, stops increasing. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, importance is given to the spiritual consciousness, not the body. The entire cosmic body increased by the same process that we experience in our small bodies. One should not, however, foolishly think that the individual infinitesimal soul is the cause of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. The universal form is called the Virat Rupa because the Supreme Lord is within it in his plenary portion. Now Virat, I don't know, what does Virat mean? Gigantic, I guess, something like that. So Prabhupada is saying here, we're not the cause of it. We can't do it. Again, we can see Prabhupada is picking on the impersonalists because they tend to think that way. There's a type of meditation where people go and they sit and they watch the sunrise and they meditate that they're making it rise. That is the meditation. So, good luck with that. Try to make it stop rising. See how far you get. So it takes the power of Krishna for all of these things, this gigantic universe. Okay, text number 6. Hiranmaya Sapurusha Sahasra Parivatsaran Anda Kosha Uvashatsu Sarva Swatko Pabrinta. The gigantic, it's hard getting, it's kind of dull vision, light here, actually, I was saying, it might be good to have a little spotlight here, at least for us old folks. The gigantic Virat Purusha, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the elements lay within him. So I always think this is interesting, we talk about these periods of time, because we measure time according to the sun, but there's no sun yet. these things come later. So it's just a way of, I guess you would say, well, if you were measuring it, that's how long it would be if the sun were out. You know, in the fifth canto, or excuse me, third canto, it talks about time, a chapter on time. The smallest unit of time is how long it takes the sun to move the distance of one atom on Paramanu. So that's not a very, that's a pretty small amount of time. Of course, in the Vedic conception, the sun is moving around the universe. Very quickly, actually, it's moving. So anyway, the gigantic Virat Purusha known as Hiranmaya. So here, actually, Hiranmaya just means golden. Hiran means golden, Maya means made of. Or it's translated as even, sometimes it's described as being covered with gold, like gold-plated. But generally, Hiranmaya means made of gold. I was just reading, actually. It's interesting because I wasn't sure Prabhupada in the fifth canto, where it talks about Varuna, I guess in the context of maybe the resonance of Jambudvipa offering prayers. Yeah, I think so. Somebody's offering prayers. Some residents of some, one of the Varshas is offering prayers to Varuna Devi. And there it says he's Apamaya, this word again, M-A-Y-A, Apamaya. So Apamaya means made of water, literally. That's the way Prabhupada translates it. And I thought, well, maybe there are other ways to translate it. I was just saying, sometimes Maya is translated in different ways. But I was just reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and he gives the same translation. It says, Varuna has a body made of water. So think how that works. I don't know. He doesn't walk anywhere, he just flows, I guess. You know, sometimes they see people just glide. That's the proper. Sometimes people would say it looked like proper, just glided in. It's airport arrival. It seemed to float in. Anyway, the gigantic Virat Purusha known as Hiranmaya lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all living entities lay with him. So again, it sounds like it's an actual person. He's lying down. Purport, after the Lord entered each and every universe as the garbled Dakshaya Vishnu, half the universe was filled with water. The cosmic manifestation of the planetary systems, outer space, etc., which are visible to us, is only one half of the complete universe. So half of it's filled with water coming from Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu. You know, just a little aside, if you want to leave this material, with the yogis, they progress all the way up to the top of the universe. They go through the Shishumar, and all this, you know, we hear about later in the Bhagavatam. And they penetrate the coverings of the universe. Then they have to cross the Viraja River. And in the Vedas, it says that the Viraja River is created by the perspiration of the Vedas personified. So the idea of something, it says this indicates that, first of all, you have to be guided by the Vedas in order to get into transcendence. And also, it takes some perspiration. It takes some sweat on your part to get through it, to make it into transcendence. Anyway, let's see. Because the manifestation takes place before the manifestation takes place, and after the entrance of Vishnu within the universe, there is a period of 1,000 celestial years. Celestial years. All the living entities injected within the womb of the Mahatattva are divided in all universes with the incarnation of Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu. So in first read it, divided in all, I think it means they're, you know, spread out in all the different universes. There are so many, an infinite number of universes, infinite number of jivas in this material world. So some are in some universes and some are in others. We're in the smallest one, with Brahma having only four heads instead of millions or billions of heads, as it does in other places. So it says they're in the universe along with Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu. He's there and the jivas are all there. And all of them lie down with the Lord until Brahma is born. which is interesting. So they're all really unmanifest in some way. The souls are there, and they're there with their karma. The karma accompanies them. And in some kind of subtle some kind of form, I suppose. And let's see. All of them lie down with the Lord until Brahma is born. Now the Lord, of course, he's never alone. The Lord always has his devotees. So there are obviously entities there. When Krishna said in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, says, in the beginning only I existed. It doesn't mean that he was just by himself. He's never by himself. Actually, in the Bhagavatam, wherever you see any great personality comes on the scene, there's always somebody there. They always have their entourage, and their entourage is generally offering prayers to them. Like you may read about one of the Manus appearing someplace, and they'd only describe him, or maybe him and his wife. But you know, it's never like that. They always have a big entourage accompanying them. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he's never alone. Of course, he's there with Ananta Shesha, lying on a snake. It's quite a remarkable thing that the Lord, the God, lies down on a snake. When I heard one implication of that is that it shows how fearless he is, because usually people are afraid of snakes. But he lies down, and he goes to sleep on a snake. So it's no problem for him. So all the universes, all of them lie down with the Lord until Brahma is born. So they're napping along with him. Actually, it says whenever you hear about the Lord resting, you know, you may have heard this actually in Chaitanya, I don't know if it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but definitely in Chaitanya Bhagavata, where the Brahmanas were complaining about the Sankirtan movement. And one of the things they said is that this is the period that Lord Vishnu is asleep, and you're going to wake him up, and he's going to be unhappy about that. So stop this loud chanting. So when the Lord is set to sleep, actually he's not sleeping, he's enjoying with his internal potency. The idea is that now he's giving no thought whatsoever to the material creation. Of course, Krishna doesn't. He doesn't think about, you might say, it's all his Purusha expansions who are involved with the material world. But even they take a break from it. So when it's said that they're sleeping, they're not sleeping. Really. It's called yoga nidra. Actually, you can take yoga too. Yoga means to connect. So Krishna's connecting or consorting with his internal energy. Sometimes called Durga. Actually, in Brahma Samhita, she's called Durga. There's a spiritual Durga and expansion in the material world. Material Durga. So that's what he does when he's apparently asleep. And also, he's not alone. And sometimes it's said, another idea is that sometimes it says that, you know, he doesn't do anything. He's off work, you might say. But it doesn't mean he's not doing anything. He's doing other things. He's at home, you might say. He's inside his home doing other things, not his external work. So that's what's going on during this time, this period between the manifestations. Let's see. Brahma is the first living being within the universe, and from him all other demigods and living creatures are born. We start with Brahma. Of course, we all know the story. He starts only him, sitting on top of the lotus, and doesn't know what's going on. But being empowered by Krishna, he's able to create. He creates the Prajapatis, of course, and then from them, so many things, so many generations unfold. All the different species of life come. Manu is the original father of mankind, and therefore in Sanskrit, Manu is called Manusha. So he's mentioning that because Manu is one of the first to appear. He's not the first to appear, others were created. When you read about the creation of Manu, and actually, I think it's later in the third canto. It's described there, yeah, actually it's coming up fairly soon, because we'll be hearing about the Varaha coming up fairly soon, later in the third canto. So that's in relationship to Manu. But it said there that Manu, when Manu was created, then Lord Brahma was very pleased. And the other personalities he had created were also very pleased. So the idea is that he was pleased because Manu is, from him come Manusha, human beings, and the human form of life is so important. So Brahma was pleased because his job ultimately is to help the jivas get out of this material world. That's why he does what he does. So when the human form was created, which is especially favorable for that, and he was very pleased by that. So finally, this sentence, humanity in different bodily qualities is distributed throughout the various planetary systems. So this is, of course, another important part of the Virata Rupa, that there's all kinds of variety there. I was just reading the beginning of one of the... Oh, it's the very beginning of the last chapter in the fifth canto, which is the chapter about the hellish planets. But it begins with Pariksit Maharaj asking, what is the purpose of all this variety? Because he's heard about... Actually, in one sense, all this description of the cosmos in the fifth canto is meditation on the universal form. It's describing more in detail what it actually looks like, what makes up this universe. So Pariksit Maharaj, he asks, why is there so much variety? Because he's here in this place, this happens in this place, and these entities are here, and so on. So Sukadeva Goswami replies that it's all about the karma of the living entities. There are people who are dharmic, there are those who are adharmic, and there are those who are in between, somewhat dharmic and somewhat adharmic. And they, according to what they do, they end up in these different... All these places are available to them according to what they do. And then somehow this progresses into a description of the hellish planets. So, well, now I'll tell you about these planets too. I've told you about actually mostly nicer parts of the universe, but this is the parts, you know, all these different hellish planets where living entities are separate for their adharma. So this is the, you know, the whole scheme of the thing, what it's all about ultimately. It's helping the living entities get out of this material world. Actually, it's said there in the Sukadeva Goswami says, these living entities are punished here to get them to be dharmic. Stop being sinful, and you won't have to be boiled in oil next time around, or whatever, all these horrible things that happened there. They're really, really amazing. I guess because, you know, we tend to think, maybe we think, well, this is some kind of subtle thing going on, and maybe it's not that bad. But it is. It's really horrible, actually. I just recently came across an answer to a question which is somewhat related to this. I've had for a long time, and I've probably mentioned it in class before, is that what happens when we leave this body? What ahankar do we have? Because you think, well, I'm not inside this body anymore. I've left it, and the subtle body leaves, and it goes on to the next body. So what conception of self do I have at that time? So it actually says, it's actually answered in the Bhagavatam, I'm forgetting right now where it occurs, but it says that the subtle body remains the same ahankar that I have now. I'm thinking on this particular material manifestation, that goes with the soul to the next body. So it stays until we enter into a new body. That's the conception of self that we have. And the example is given, it's right there in a verse in Bhagavatam, it's just like it says, to like a caterpillar going from one leaf to the next. So it doesn't let go of the previous one until it's firmly fixed in the next one. So that's what happens. That's when our ahankar, that's when I stop thinking that I'm this American man and so on. And then that subtle body, it also goes to the hellish planets. And now there may be another covering to that. I'm not quite sure about that. But still, you still have that sense of I, and I am suffering, and I'm being burnt and torn apart by the rules, or whatever, all these different things that can happen. And the suffering is real. It's in some subtle form, but we perceive it as real, like this is really happening to me. And there's no escape. In some ways, of course, it's worse than what occurs here, because when things get too bad in this physical body, we just pass out, become unconscious if the suffering is too intense. But you're not allowed that escape in the hellish planet. You gotta keep going. So, I tend not to read that chapter, actually. It's really a heavy thing to read. the way people suffer, it's pretty, it's really intense. That's at the end of the, actually at the very end, so that what, now this is the end of the fifth canto, the end of that chapter is at the end of the fifth canto, and there's something there I wanted to read right there, which kind of puts the description of, again, I said that the fifth canto, a lot of it is really talking about the universal form. We can say it's about the Virata Rupa. Let's see. Oh, here. Oh, yeah. There are two verses, actually. 5:26, that's the last chapter. Verses 38 and 39. And let me just read the translations here. In the beginning, the second and third cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, I have already described how one can progress on the path of liberation. In the Puranas, the vast universal existence, which is like an egg divided into 14 parts, is described. This vast form is considered the external body of the Lord, created by his energy and qualities. It is generally called the Virat Rupa. If one reads the descriptions, now he's saying why he's doing, he's explaining all this, or has explained. If one reads the descriptions of this external form of the Lord with great faith, which is these chapters of the fifth canto, if one hears about it or explains it to others to propagate Bhagavad Dharma or Krishna consciousness, his faith and devotion in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, will gradually increase. So you make spiritual advancement by reading about the structure of the universe. Although developing this consciousness is very difficult, by this process one can purify himself and gradually come to an awareness of the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is Prabhupada's purport. The Krishna consciousness movement is pushing forward the publication of Srimad Bhagavatam as explained especially for the understanding of the modern civilized man, to awaken him to his original consciousness. This is nice. Prabhupada is saying, I'm presenting it in my translation and commentary specifically for the modern man. You know, I'm not Jiva Goswami writing for someone in the 16th century. I'm writing for a modern man. I'm presenting it in that way. Without this consciousness, one melts into complete darkness. Interesting conception. Whether one goes to the upper planetary systems or the hellish planetary systems, he simply wastes his time. Therefore, one should hear of the universal position of the Virat form of the Lord as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. That will help one save himself from material conditional life and gradually elevate him to the path of liberation so that he can go back home, back to Godhead. So that's 5:26-38, and this is 39. One who is interested in liberation, who accepts the path of liberation, and is not attracted to the path of conditional life, is called a yati, or a devotee. Such a person should first control his mind by thinking of the Virat Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, and gradually think of the spiritual form of Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, after hearing of both forms. Thus one's mind is fixed in samadhi. By devotional service, one can then realize the spiritual form of the Lord, which is the destination of devotees, then his life becomes successful. Prabhupada also has a nice purport to this verse. So, actually, there's another really nice, let's see what verse is this, in case you want to look it up. It has a very nice purport. 5:16-3. So 5:16 is when Sukadeva starts talking about the structure of the universe. I forget what the title of the chapter is. So there he explains. Let's see. Anyway, I won't read it. It's fairly long, but Prabhupada, again, he is justifying the reason for this and how this is very helpful for one's advancement in spiritual life. The universal form is certain material. This is from Prabhupada's purport. But because everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately nothing is material. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj's mind was saturated with spiritual consciousness. Actually, what Prabhupada says just before that, as I was mentioning, it's the Sukadeva Goswami recommended one meditate on the universal form. So Prabhupada said that Parikshit Maharaj did that. And he advanced in spiritual consciousness by meditating on the spiritual form. I'm thinking, well, how did he do that? Well, he was listening to, listening to the Bhagavatam. Of course, if he was meditating in the sense that he was hearing what Shukadeva Goswami was saying, so that was his meditation, hearing the description of the universal form. And Prabhupada says that helped. Then he was became absorbed in spiritual consciousness, progressing step by step. So anyway, it's a kind of a big topic. It's quite an important topic, the universal form of the Lord. As I mentioned, it's covered multiple times in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments?
Since Mother Yashoda maybe experience our mission in the mouth of Krishna, is that also considered temporary? Or
what did you say? I didn't hear.
Inside the mouth of Lord Krishna.
Oh, the universal form. Yeah. There are different, Krishna manifested the material, the universal form in different ways. Actually, I was thinking it's interesting, this word manifestation. It's often used. In fact, I had this whole quote from Vishnu Purana, which I can't read. I don't have time to read. But it talks about four manifestations of the Lord. And one of them is the Virat Rupa. He's Pada and Apada, and Murta and Amurta. Pada means transcendental, and Apada means material, not transcendental. And Murta means he has a form, and Amurta means he doesn't have a form. So you can combine these two things in four ways, and they describe different forms. Manifestations of the Lord is described. So one of them is the Virat Rupa. So Krishna manifested the Virat Rupa in different ways. Of course, he showed Duryodhana a universal form. He showed Arjuna a universal form. He showed Mother Yashoda twice universe within his mouth. So this is, of course, everything is real ultimately. Even if Krishna creates some kind of illusion, it's still real. So, but he does it according to, you know, his desire at a particular time, his what he wants the devotee or non-devotee to experience and to grow in certain ways. Krishna's always trying to help us grow spiritually. Even, of course, Mother Yashoda. Of course, we also learn things from what Krishna does with his devotees. But, we get a lesson from that, pursuing universal form. But somehow, Krishna created that vision for her, which, it also shows how Krishna is just inconceivable. He can do things that are just beyond logic. How can the universe be inside Krishna's mouth? You're looking into a little hole, 2 inches wide, and the whole universe is in there. And you're in there too. She's in there with Krishna. And I suppose that she's in there looking in Krishna's mouth. You have one of these things where you have, infinite regress going on. So this part, Krishna is showing his great power to us as we're reading it. We read about these things, of course. We read about them in the Bhagavatam. So one thing is it doesn't seem like, it's not material in the same sense that this is. That there were real, literal mountains and so on, planets inside Mother Yashoda's mouth. But some vision of that was presented to her. That's the idea. As far as she could see, she looked in there and the whole universe was in there.
I remember Rupa Goswami Pad says in Nectar Devotion, there are 20 qualities in the universal form that is not, or elements, that is not in Satchidananda form. Mm-hmm. But then universal form within the Satchidananda form. What am I supposed to think?
There's a Satchidananda form, well, Krishna is within everything. So just like you said here, Dart said something about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu manifesting the universal form. So it all comes from the Lord ultimately. Yeah, he's within everything. Of course, the Brahma Samhita tells us Krishna's present in full even within the atom. So these things are... One good thing about reading this is, it's hard to understand, but we think we understand Krishna. Oh, Krishna's just running in the woods with the cowherd boys, and he's flirting with the gopis and so on. I can relate to that. You know, it's like life that we know as we know it. But we don't understand even the material world. So are we really understanding what's going on with Krishna? No. Krishna is Satchidananda. What does it mean when consciousness does something? Eternity, knowledge, and bliss interacting with another form, vigraha, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. What does it mean? So everything we see is kind of, in some sense, it's metaphorical. I don't want to say it's not real, but we're not exactly seeing what's there. We can't see with these material eyes. We can't conceive with this brain either, with our body. The definition of achintya, it's all achintya. In the Mahabharata, there's that famous verse, achintya kalu ye bhava natang starkina yuja prapati vya pramyaccha padachintyasya lakshanam. So lakshanam means the characteristic. What is the characteristic of achintya, achintya lakshanam? It's that it's beyond prakriti. So that means everything that's spiritual is achintya. And we talk about achintya beda beda tattva, how something can be one thing, or two things and one thing at the same time. But actually everything in the spiritual world is achintya. Atta Sri Krishna nama adi na bhavet grayam indriya. Our senses can't penetrate that. But what's amazing is that even though we're kind of seeing some flat image, you might say, not multidimensional, still just by meditating and fixing our minds on that, we become purified. That's Krishna's mercy. That's the lesson at the beginning of the prayers of personified Vedas. The Vedas, what Krishna has revealed through the Vedas, allows us entry into transcendence, even though everything we have is mundane. He's created a body that he's created the human form, the human mind, intelligence, in such a way that the Vedas can communicate transcendental knowledge to us, even though, you know, it's like two different worlds, but they're brought together through the power of the Vedas. Shabda Brahma, that sound is so powerful. So my point is, even just like here, this is an example, this is all material, the universe. Of course, in a sense, as Prabhupada says, it's not really material, because it's Krishna's energy. And everything about Krishna is spiritual. Ultimately, everything is spiritual because it's just Krishna's energy manifesting in different ways. But by contact with that, under guidance, proper guidance, of course, you know, kids say, well, I'm in the material world, I'm associating with Krishna's body, so this is, you know, everything is spiritual. But some people think like that. They try to say, well, what's the problem? It's all spiritual. I don't need to do anything. I'm already liberated in this material world because it's spiritual. No, you have to be able to access it by training and guidance.
I want to hear you take away from, like when you say sat, it seems like a time or eternity is like a, okay, maybe not measurable, but you cannot say it's a form in one sense. When you say chit, knowledge, is it a form? Knowledge is a form? Or knowledge is some subtle elements like somebody causes, not a...
Not sure I got your whole question. First you said sat, did you say sat?
Yeah.
Yeah, but one thing about sat is sat just means existing always. It's not that past, present, and future is the material world. Sat means just is, it just is. Now the other part of your question was...
The knowledge.
Oh, knowledge.
Knowledge is not a person. Knowledge, well, is like somebody, some person has a knowledge.
Well, that's a problem. Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, I've spoken of this before, actually. What is knowledge exactly? It's something in a book. Actually, knowledge is not the best translation for the word chit. Chit means consciousness. And even jnana in Vedanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yaj Jnanam Advayam. The absolute truth is Advaya Jnana. So jnana there doesn't mean knowledge in the sense that we think of knowledge. It means consciousness. So that's part, you know, we can understand what consciousness, well, of course, maybe we can't because the scientists can't figure out what it is. But I think we have an idea what consciousness is. We all experience it ourselves. So that's what the chit is. Krishna is in charge of that sambit potency, sambit shakti. So that's what, you know, it's not knowledge, like even the idea that we say Krishna's form is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. The idea there is not that, well, he knows everything, you know, he knows in the sense that we think that somebody knows, or this person really knows a lot. This person knows a lot of verses or whatever, knows how to design a house or whatever. This kind of knowledge, that's not what that's about. When we say that Krishna's full of knowledge, it means chit, it means consciousness. His consciousness pervades everything, and it's part of his constitution. Of course, it's part of our constitution too. We're conscious and consciousness. Jiva Goswami talks about that in his Sundarbas. Anyway, it's another whole topic. But that's the idea with Krishna. And of course, Ananda, the most important part of the Swarup Shakti, Krishna's internal potency, is his Ananda. Ananda is about ascetics, you can say. You know, we have intellectual pursuits and we have ascetic pursuits, art and music and so on, beauty and love, all of these things. Ananda doesn't only mean bliss, it also means love. Of course, they go together. So that's the most important part of Krishna. And of course, the Mahabhava Rupa Radha Thakurani, the form of love is Srimati Radharani. Of course, you might say that's the part of himself that Krishna most cherishes. More than his sat and chit, he cherishes his ananda shakti. He spends his time. That's where he focuses his chit on his ananda. Yes?
You were saying about the gross and the subtle universal form. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, like, how to understand that. Is it, like, the gross form is what we can perceive with our material senses? Like, we can see the planets, and we can see, like, perceive outer space, and we can perceive, mm-hmm. like, there's Venus and there's Moon. That's like, is that like a gross
yeah.
idea? And then the subtle yeah. idea is like, but on those planets, they're like living entities, and we cannot perceive them with our material senses. And then there's like the Garbhadaksha ocean. Is that like a good way to differentiate?
Well, one thing is actually where when that, maybe I should have printed out that verse that mentions the subtle universal form in the second, is it the second canto? I think so. Because it gives characteristics of it. And when you read it, it sounds like a description of Brahman. Where it doesn't have any, it's unmanifest, and it's, I forget what the characteristics of it are, but it has these characteristics where, like, it sounds like a qualityless Brahman, but it's not. It's somehow just kind of a subtle state of matter. It's just like the Pradhan, you might say. What is the Pradhan exactly? The Pradhan is unmanifest material nature. It's really before, it's kind of like pre-matter. Matter in some kind of potential state, you might say. So that's one way of looking at it. We often hear, well, we don't maybe often hear it, but depending on what you read, you may hear in the Vedas mentions of, you know, looking at certain things in that way is that they're in a potential state. Actually, one of the definitions of energy, or the main definition of energy, is the potential for work. So one way to look at this subtle universal form is that it's the gross universal form in its potential state. It's inert, kind of inert matter, or maybe pre-matter, or something like that. But these things, these are also inconceivable, really. Because what's happening, Krishna is, when he creates this world, he's taking spirit and he's somehow, now this is another whole question, because according to the Vishnu Purana, Krishna has various energies. He has spiritual energy and he has material energy. So it seems like the material energy is coming directly from Krishna in that verse from the Vishnu Purana. So this is something I know devotees are you know, discuss. Because Prabhupada generally talks about, just like I read the line in this one purport, that everything is spiritual. But he takes the spiritual energy and he transforms it into material energy. But the verse from the Vishnu Purana seems to present it differently. Yeah, Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta. There are Tritiya Shakti Rishi. There are three energies, the spiritual, material, and the marginal. And they're all coming directly from Krishna. So it's actually in its own category, the material energy. So anyway, these things are they're hard to figure out. And that's why one reason, you know, our acharyas, they write and they discuss these things in detail and look into them. And of course, even other sampradayas, they may look into them even more closely because we're more interested in rasa than in vichara. Vichara means this excruciating kind of taking things apart and trying to figure them all out. Whereas we, just like Mother Yashoda, she's trying to figure it out and ultimately said, I only just love Krishna. I can't figure it out. So sometimes these things are, they're quite subtle actually. That's another thing. You know, to understand subtle aspects even of the material world, you know, our consciousness has to become more refined, or our intelligence has to become more refined. Years ago I read a book by an academic about consciousness. And he came out, it was interesting, I thought, because he said, actually it may be that we're struggling to understand. He said that it may be that there are some people who just have a better understanding of it naturally. They have an intuitive understanding of it. Of course, we say you want to see who knows consciousness, besides the devotees, of course, but the yogis, that's what they do. That's their practice. Let me figure out who is the real I here. Of course, they tend to come to an impersonal understanding. Anyway, the idea is that sometimes these things require, you know, more refinement of our intelligence by spiritual association and hearing Krishna Katha for a long time. Okay, yeah, it's getting late, we'll stop. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Prabhupada.